Our gospel reading this morning is from the 5th chapter of Matthew, beginning at the 21st verse. This, of course, is a portion of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment." But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say you fool, you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Some of you will remember a scene in the movie Gandhi some years ago, in which a Hindu man comes to Gandhi to argue why he would continue fighting the Muslims despite Gandhi's campaign to end the fighting. "The Muslims took my little boy and crushed his head," said the Hindu man. "So I in turn took a Muslim boy and killed him in the same way." And then the Hindu man comments sadly, "I have been living in hell." Gandhi reflects quietly for a moment, and then he replies softly, "I think I know a way out of hell. Go and find a boy similar to the one the Muslims killed. Take him into your home as a son and raise him as a Muslim." Today's reading from Deuteronomy reminds us that we humans are always confronted with choices in the everyday events of our lives. Choices between heaven and hell, blessing and curse, life and death. And it matters much which choices we make, even when in the moment we may not recognize those choices for what they really are. And so, just as Gandhi urged the Hindu man to opt for a way out of hell, so the Deuteronomy author says, "Choose life, that you and your descendants may live." Why opt for hell when you can have heaven? And then in today's reading from the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus brings the matter of choice down to the level of our personal relationships. When differences with others provoke us to anger, how then are we to respond? Now, the issue is not being angry per se, because we know Jesus himself showed anger on more than one occasion. But the question is, how do we respond to our anger? For Jesus, the path to hell begins with staying angry with another without trying to resolve it. Now, that isn't the same as murder, and yet it still puts one under judgment in Jesus' perspective. We might say it makes it at least a municipal court offense. Now, adding insults can bring it up to the superior court level, and branding the other as a fool, as one not even worthy of your respect, puts you at the door of hell. Now, to the Jews of Jesus' time, a fool was seen as one so ungodly that he was even beyond the pale of God's love. Total scum, in other words. But still, you say, these are only words. Why then does Jesus treat them so seriously? Is it not because such words do, in fact, have the power to tear people down and destroy relationships? Now, God's will is always on the side of relationships that enhance and that build up human life. And so vengeful anger can be the functional equivalent of murder from God's perspective. And as we know, the judgment is not only in the mind of God, but it can also be the kind of personal hell that can come from our alienation from others. Like the Hindu man who came to Gandhi, we may experience the hell of being caught up in animosity and antagonism that comes from our vengeful feelings. And friends, that is not a happy way to live, as I think you will agree. But beyond our personal relationships, we are aware of living in a time when this animosity pervades the public arena. This also is not a happy time in the life of our nation. And yes, we know the deep-going differences in cultural and moral values and political philosophy that underlie all this. We know the differences are not just going to go away. But surely we must ask, even given all of these differences, is there not an alternative to the hellish climate of animosity that we find ourselves in today? Can Jesus' teaching point us to a climate more of blessing than of curse? We know this will not be an easy process, and we know it won't happen out there, even apart from us. How we relate to one another and how we approach our differences has everything to do with whether positive change will come about in our public life. But I would suggest that to the extent that we refuse to live in the hell of animosity, we will be making our own personal contribution to a more harmonious world. And I think we know in our heart of hearts where we have to begin. The beginning point is our belief that every human being is a beloved child of God and must be respected as such. Now, we will often disagree with others, and we may think them totally wrong-headed, because, of course, we are so sure that we have the truth, and we rather believe that's God's truth as well. On Lincoln's birthday today, I'm reminded of an instance where Lincoln attended a church meeting where a member was arguing for some particular cause, and he closed by piously trusting that the Lord is on my side. Well, Lincoln's response was, "I'm not concerned whose side the Lord is on, but it matters to me a lot that I should be on the Lord's side." Well, we may or may not be on the Lord's side in whatever truth we claim. Those who differ from us may have a piece of it as well. But in any case, we have no license simply to write off those we disagree with as fools unworthy of our basic respect. For every human being has worth in God's eyes. And second, then, as we have opportunity, we can try to speak our truth to others in love. When someone has said or done something that angers us, letting them know what has upset us, I think, is far better than just stewing about it, even if that doesn't heal the fractured relationship. For then we have at least created the possibility of bridging the gulf that has arisen. I admit to being a regular reader of the Ask Amy column in the newspaper. Again and again, I note that people write Amy about how they are at odds with someone and they don't know what to do about it. And again, Amy's response is, go to the other person and tell him what your beef is, and then see if the two of you can work it out together. Now, of course, it's much better to work things out if you're going to wait till you've cooled off a bit and can speak more in love and respect than simply in anger. And the purpose here is not to dump your anger on the other, which is almost sure to backfire, but rather your goal is to try to get rid of the barrier that has come between you, to bridge across it, so that the two of you then can be in a better place with each other once again. And hopefully your willingness to confront the issue lets the other know of your goodwill and invites the other to respond in a similar vein. Alas, in the public arena, we often don't get the opportunity to engage with those who differ from us in a setting where the respectful sharing of differences can happen. I believe that the more that this can happen, the more that today's divisive climate is likely to be mitigated as we come to better understand what's behind our differing positions. Now, I rejoice in the opportunities provided in this congregation to engage with those with different viewpoints And I would urge you to take advantage of those whenever you are able. But whether or not we are able to have these encounters, the attitudes that we have toward differing others matters a great deal. You see, our gut-level instinct may simply be to demonize them, to write them off as meriting no respect from us, and simply to vent our animosity toward them. But friends, that is only going to add to the hell of today's antagonistic climate. As Jesus' followers, we are called to better than that. The writer Deborah Smith Douglas tells of her experience in the aftermath of the bombing at the Boston Marathon about 3 years ago. Like many in Boston, she didn't sleep that night, but rather she kept pacing the floor in her small apartment, filled with fear at the hatred and violence that had been unleashed. Looking out her window at the darkness, she wondered what she could do about it. She describes her experience there in these words. "So I stood in that window, like a radio operator behind enemy lines, or like a lighthouse in a storm, trying steadily with all my small strength to send out an opposing signal, a beam of light to pierce the darkness. As grandiose as it sounds now, that night I felt compelled to choose a side, plant a flag, take a stand in that window for life against death, for love against hate. Alone, but powerfully bound to others whom I knew must be praying too, across the city and around the world." Friends, I think it's that kind of outlook that can move our society toward more positive change. Rather than giving in to our fears and stewing in our anger, we too can resolve to take a stand for love against hate and refuse to be a part of the divisiveness and the animosity that so often surrounds us. And yes, it's going to be hard work. And hard especially, I think, because of how it goes against the kind of emotional hold that anger so often can have on us. In my moments of anger, I'm so aware of that within myself. You know, so often our anger feels righteous, and in that moment our choice of blessing or curse can really get distorted. But Jesus reminds us that the path of life lies in moving past our anger toward reconciliation to whatever extent possible. The art of avoiding hell is working to bridge our gulfs that separate us from others, for that's where we will find life. For ourselves, for others, and yes, for the whole human family. May it so be. Amen.